Hey, welcome back to I Just Want to See, the documentary review podcast. I say welcome back because I haven't done a podcast in almost 6 months now, I'd say. Between getting sick a couple of times and having a hernia surgery in the new year and going to Vegas a couple of times and being busy with work and just haven't had a chance to watch any movies, haven't had a chance to do any podcasts. But fortunately, all that changed last week here in Dallas. They had the AFI Dallas International Film Festival, and my girlfriend was nice enough and understanding enough to let me go and take in quite a few of the movies down there. I went and saw 7 documentaries during the festival, and just wanted to talk to you guys briefly about all of them. Because I think all of them were good, some better than others, some that weren't necessarily for me, but you know, all in all, rather enjoyable experience, and definitely would like to get the word out about them. The first film I saw was A Haze by Pete Shurman, and the movie focuses on binge drinking and alcohol abuse on college campuses. This is something that if you've been on a college campus, you're certainly aware of. You've seen it. You've been a part of it. And it's it's an increasing problem. The movie, I guess, really tackles the subject from a couple of different standpoints. It goes the traditional route, speaking to experts and doctors and going onto some campuses and seeing what exactly is going on. This is obviously made a little bit easier because now with the internet and YouTube and all the video sites, you know, there's tons of videos of kids getting drunk and posting their posting whatever they're doing while they're drunk online. But I think really the more compelling part of the compelling part of the film, and the most effective part is the director looking at the story of Gordy Bailey, whose family is actually from the Dallas area, and Gordy was a freshman at the University of Colorado who was pledging a fraternity. And during the initiation, Gordy Bailey actually died from alcohol poisoning. And really was the manner in which he died, the careless and needless manner in which he died that I think really got the attention of the filmmakers and made for a perfect subject for the film. Like I said, they look at this epidemic from 2 different perspectives. I really think that it's the story of Gordy Bailey, which makes the more interesting case. Gordy was an all-American kid. Everybody loved him. He was a great athlete. He was a big teddy bear, and he got involved in drinking, just like a lot of kids do when they go off to school. And one thing led to another. And, he was always looking to be the best at everything. And, you know, as part of his initiation, ingested a large amount of alcohol and died in the fraternity home with the brothers that were supposed to be, looking after him, taking care of him. The film also takes a look at the... I'm not sure if it was an intent when the film was originally put together, but they end up looking at the fraternity or really just the Greek system in general, but specifically fraternities because the incidents of alcohol abuse that lead to death are much it's almost non-existent at the sorority level, but with the fraternity level, that's where you see the almost exclusive group of alcohol-related fatalities. And, they definitely raise some interesting points about the fraternity system and why it why it cultivates this this environment, why it continues to happen, what the fraternities have at have at stake with with these rituals and with the initiations. And I thought it made some pretty valid points just about the system and how it harbors this this cycle of abuse. It involves alcohol and rituals and all the usual things that go on with fraternities. But I thought it was definitely an interesting angle, and an angle that is it was definitely relevant given the desired target audience for the film, which is colleges, college campuses, and high school students. The film is actually being given free to high schools, and universities can purchase it. I'm not sure of the price, but apparently it's been purchased by about 120 universities. I'm not sure about the number of high schools, but I think that if kids see this movie, it will make people think twice. It's not going to make everybody think twice, but I think it'll make enough people just be a little bit more cautious and be willing to take the steps necessary when they see a friend in need, a friend in need of assistance, to make the call, get the person help. And it's one of those things, better be safe than sorry, because if you don't, you never know when your friend might end up like Gordy at the time when you least expect it. If you want to learn more about the movie, you can go to Haze, H-A-Z-E, themovie.com. You can also go to the Gordy Foundation website, www.gordie.com. And apparently the film is available for viewing at Snag. So you can go to Snag, S-N-A-G, films.com, snagfilms.com. The second movie I went and saw was Prom Night in Mississippi. This movie was by Paul Saltzman, and it takes a look at a Mississippi community. I believe it was Charleston, Mississippi. And in this town, they, up until the year 2008, had racially segregated proms. So you had a white prom and you had a black prom. Apparently in 1998, Morgan Freeman had offered to pay for the prom of the school, provided that it was an integrated prom. The offer was ignored, and it basically was put to bed. Apparently somebody found out about this and pushed Morgan Freeman to make this offer again. And he did, and this time the school accepted the offer. Morgan Freeman would pay 100% of the expense of the prom, and it would be an integrated prom for the first time ever in the year 2008. And this movie, it focuses on the kids, and there's a lot of lightheartedness with the kids, a lot of interviews with both black students, white students. It's a predominantly black school, at 70% black. Really, in speaking with a lot of the kids, the kids want to have this integrated prom. It sounds like they've wanted to have it for a pretty good amount of time, but the parents were the ones that were really pushing the separated or the segregated proms. And I thought that Saltzman did a pretty good job at, not only looking at, the issue at hand of the proms itself, but trying to delve a little bit deeper into the question of, why this has come to be. And he does he starts to take a look at it, but I don't think he really went far enough in depth because it's pretty much exposed that, you know, or, you know, it's revealed that, you know, it's really the parents that are kind of propagating this, you know, the segregated proms. And, you know, the parents really weren't spoken to much throughout the film, you know, once or twice, a couple of parents in particular. But, you know, the majority of it focused on the students themselves and getting ready for, you know, this historic occasion in the town, and, you know, what happened the night of and, you know, thereafter. And, you know, all in all, it was a good film. It definitely would, you know, probably, lead to some discussion if shown, you know, in different parts of the South where there's still, you know, a good bit of, racism living on. You know, again, it wasn't an excellent film, but I thought it was very good. Third movie I saw was called Kasim the Dream. And I had known about Kasim the Dream. Kasim the Dream is actually Kasim the Dream Ouma, a world championship fighter, boxer, I guess I have to say. Now, fighter can mean MMA, but we're looking at boxing here. And Kasim, at a young age, was abducted from his school and basically taken prisoner by a rebel force in northern Uganda. And at that time, he was told either to fight for this rebel force or die. And he saw other kids being killed because they were crying and didn't want to help. And he decided the only way for him to survive was to go along with the what his captors were wanting him to do. Kasim was able to escape the army via the boxing program when he came to the United States on a military boxing tournament. And from there, he came into the United States, was, you know, he's been given asylum and began his professional boxing career, knowing no English, knowing nobody, but he began his career. And from those beginnings, Kasim actually went on to become a world champion fighter. And, you know, I grew to know him just because of his boxing. And I knew about the story of him in Uganda. But, you know, it was really his boxing that got me interested in him. And, you know, it sounds kind of cheesy, but, you know, he seemed like the nicest guy in the world. The biggest grin, you know, after his fights. Happiest guy around. And, you know, it just makes him a very likable character. And then when you hear, you know, when you start to learn about what he went through as a child, it definitely makes for a interesting film. You get to, you know, you learn some of that background, and, you know, it's a very interesting contrast, because he seems like such a nice guy, but yet, you know, he, you know, did some awful things when, you know, against his will, granted, but did some awful things, when in this, rebel army. And, you know, and now he's a fighter again. So, you know, the film definitely makes Kasim out to be, you know, a victim, a very, likable guy, and all of that is true. And, the film actually, revealed some things about him that I didn't know, that I wasn't aware of whatsoever. Specifically, substance abuse problems that he had and is still dealing with, even when he held his world title belts. You know, this to me was actually nice to see, because as was mentioned by Mr. Davidson in the Q&A that followed the screening, the excuse me, sorry, I'm a little getting over some sickness. The director really does have a wields a large amount of power in being able to shape how they want the subject to be portrayed. And, you know, Davidson could have chosen not to include this information with the film, and nobody would have been any the wiser. But I think it was important for people to see, you know, that there's only a few ways that Kasim has been able to cope with the pain that he's felt ever since he was a child. Kasim tries to cope with this through his boxing, through substance, and also through trying to reconcile with his family. You know, his mother, he was able to get his mother brought into the U.S. Several years ago. His grandmother was still in Uganda. His father was killed as a result of him leaving the boxing team when they came to America. And they went and found his dad and tortured and killed him in front of his mother. And so his grandmother was still there. His son that he had, I guess, while he was in the army, was still there. And Kasim actually makes a trip back to Uganda, and he has to, you know, go through the government to make sure that he's not going to be attacked, or, you know, just to make sure that he was going to be safe throughout his trip, because, you know, for what he did, he could be sentenced to death. And, you know, given that he's always, you know, fought for Uganda, you know, in all of his title fights, all of his big fights, you know, ever since he's become a professional boxer, he's always had a love for his country, even though, you know, he had to do some awful things, you know, while he was a young boy. But he's always had that love. And because of that, I think the president was, you know, was definitely a lot more, you know, willing to have him come back to the country. I mean, the guy was a national hero. And so he came back and was able to, you know, see his grandmother, and to finally see his father's grave. And, you know, again, it was the movie, you know, or Kasim, I guess, really is a portrait of it, of, you know, extremes, you know, extreme sadness, extreme happiness, extreme depression. You know, he really runs the whole gamut. I would say that this is probably the best film that I saw. I might be a bit biased because of, you know, my interest in Kasim. But I think that the filmmaker showing all the different angles and all the different things going on, that's what I, you know, as a viewer really appreciated. Because as I said, I mean, there were things that I didn't even know that weren't so nice, and that painted Kasim in a not so nice light that he brought to the audience. And I definitely appreciate that. If you want to learn more about Kasim the Dream, you can go to KasimTheDream.com. Kasim is K-A-S-S-I-M. The fourth movie I went and saw was a film by Robert Kenner named Food, Inc. And it deals specifically with the food business in the United States, and that's really what food has become in the United States, is a business. And when I speak of food, I mean food at the lowest level, you know, with produce and meats and things of that nature, not processed foods necessarily, but just, you know, pure raw foods. I'm gonna take a drink here. So, in the last 40 or 50 years or so, we've seen a shift in the producers of food in the U.S. it used to be that only 20% of all the food that was produced was done so by the large corporations. However, in the last couple of decades, we've seen that shift to almost 80%. And basically, this film looks at the consequences of that being the case, with these large companies controlling a large amount of the food source. There have been issues with safety, health, you know, concerns, labor concerns, and things of that nature. Excuse me. There's also been a concern about the quality of the meats, etc. In viewing the film, I think that I would like to think that a lot of people knew a lot of the things that were presented in the film. I guess if you didn't, it was a good way to kind of learn that food has become big business, conglomerated, you know, within a few companies. The one thing that I did actually learn from the film was the problems with Monsanto, who has, you know, they were first most known for making Roundup, the weed killer, and they later went on to work with genetically engineered seeds, and they initially only had a very small market share of seeds in the United States. However, they've grown to have anywhere from like about 75% to almost 100% of specific seed markets. And the reason they were able to do this is because they were able to make seeds that were able to be resistant to different kinds of pesticides, where it wouldn't damage the seeds. But what Monsanto has done is that in allowing people to use their seeds, they are now dictating the terms by which the people can use the seeds. And one of the previously popular practices was that of cleaning the seeds, which, from my limited understanding, is basically taking the seeds after after a harvest and cleaning them and then being able to reuse them in the next season. Monsanto doesn't allow this. You have to buy new sets of seeds every single year from them. And if they find out that you're cleaning seeds or suspect that you're cleaning seeds, they will sue you for everything you have and essentially shut your farm down. And this was actually the case with quite a number of farmers that were shown in the film. And that I thought was rather disturbing. But they've been able to get away with it. And you know, it's something that I don't necessarily know if that's going to end anytime soon. Even if you have a field full of non-Monsanto seeds and some blow into your field and quote-unquote contaminate your field, they will come after you. It's pretty ruthless. That's one thing that I was not aware of, and it definitely opened my eyes to. But the vast majority of it was things that, you know, if you have a little bit of knowledge about, you know, just business in general, how life works, how, you know, how things are. If you aren't totally naive, you would kind of know a lot of the things in the film to be true. Kind of on a side note, I thought the film was kind of preaching to the choir, and whenever people applaud during a film, during the middle of the film, you know, it's so annoying. And you know, people were applauding during various things during during the screening, and you know, at that point, I knew that, you know, this guy was gonna, you know, they were just gonna eat up whatever he was saying. And, you know, it was the basic things of, you know, eat local produce and try to eat organic and, you know, know what exactly it is you're eating, etc. There really wasn't a lot of groundbreaking stuff, but he did present it in an interesting manner. It was basically a series of shorts that were all put together. All in all, not a great movie, but you know, certainly not a bad movie either. I would probably say, however, it was at the bottom of the list of films that I saw during the festival. The fifth movie I saw was Art and Copy, a movie by Doug Prey. And this movie looked at the, I guess what you call the genesis of advertising in, you know, what I would consider the modern era. You know, really in the 50s, there was a change in the way that advertising was done, and this movie attempts to look at, you know, why things happen and how they happen. And you know, I think fortunately for the filmmaker, he was given access to what I would assume are some of the biggest and brightest people in the advertising world. You know, he obviously showed a lot of clips, a lot of commercials to demonstrate, you know, how things have changed. But it was really the interviews with the various people that headed up a lot of the big firms on both the East and the West Coast, where you really saw how these ideas came to be and how they were able to, you know, how they were able to sort of develop a game plan and be able to sell items to the public. And while the advertising itself and the theories and the methodologies were interesting, what I really found the most interesting was that in hearing more and more from these advertising executives, you really began to see how their personalities came through in their work. So much to the point where, you know, some of it could, you know, arguably be considered art. You know, for instance, there's a guy on the East Coast who is from New York, and he's a, you know, born and raised in New York, a loud in your face guy. Sure enough, his ads were loud and in your face. There was a gentleman, you know, who came from a difficult family background with no real father figure, and kind of a not so great family atmosphere, and his advertising campaigns focus on family, and often about the parent-child relationship and the father, you know, specifically the father-son relationship. So that was really neat to see, and it's something that, you know, I guess we, you know, we've become so inundated, so inundated with advertising that you know, we really don't even think about, you know, the process that you know goes into making these ads. But this film, it did an awesome job of showing you, you know, exactly, you know, what the, well, not exactly, but it gives you some insight into the, into the making of an advertising campaign. And, the executives were the focus of the film, but they also took a look at the people that, you know, run the satellites and that actually put up ads, actually looking at a guy who hangs the billboards up for the campaigns. So I really enjoyed really enjoyed this movie. It was, you know, something I really didn't know much about, but I figured would be interesting. And sure enough, the personalities really drove the film. And, you know, would highly recommend it to anybody to see. You know, I think we all know of commercials, and, you know, we've seen them so much. Everybody is familiar with them. But upon viewing the film, I realized how unfamiliar I was with how they went about making these advertising campaigns. The sixth movie I went and saw was Tyson by James Toback, famous film director James Toback. And this, although James Toback at the preceding the film wanted to try and say that this was not a documentary film, I would consider it a doc. It was essentially a camera on mic, and Mike spoke, for about 90 minutes. It was spliced with a lot of film footage, early in his career and throughout his career. And I think the only other person that I remember speaking, really speaking in the clips, was his first trainer, Customato. And it was a sold out screening. Excuse me. And I honestly think that most of the people are there kind of as a for the freak factor. Because everybody knows about, Mike Tyson and knows, that he's a loose cannon and, says, goofy things at times. And, that honestly, I knew all that. I'm a huge boxing fan. None of that was any surprise. I really wanted to see if this film kind of showed what made Mike tick. And I don't want to give away too much of the film. But I think that Toback does a really, really good job of finding out what exactly it is that has driven Tyson through, the last 20 years. And in doing that, you really do start to get a sense, you get to develop an understanding of why it is he's done the things that he's done, both in and outside of the ring. And I thought that Tyson, for the most part, was pretty frank, was pretty candid. I really am wondering about how much film Toback got before and after Mike was into rehab, because there are periods of the movie where he seemed definitely more under the influence of either illegal or legal drugs. And the only problem I really had with the film was that I think in exposing what the root of a lot of or exposing the motivating force behind a lot of things in Mike's life, I just wonder if I just wonder how everything was put together. It was almost like, all right, I got to the end. I kind of knew, you find out what's causing everything, but he didn't have a chance to then go back and do more interviews with him. I think had he had that opportunity, I think he would have delved even deeper into that motivating force. I mean, I could go on and talk about it here, but I'd much rather you go and see the film and, find out exactly what it was for yourself. And, if you've seen it, I know it's been screened for almost the last year now. If you've seen it, and want to discuss it, by all means, drop a line or a comment, and would definitely be interested to hear other people's take on the film. So it's been almost 34 minutes now. So I'll get to the last film here. The last film was The Dungeon Masters by Kevin McAllister, McAllister. And this movie, it's funny, I saw Tyson on the last night of the festival, and immediately after I went and saw The Dungeon Masters. So it was pretty interesting movies back to back. The Dungeon Masters, it's a film that takes a look at Dungeons and Dragons and the people that play it, the people that still play it to this day. I never I never played D&D. I didn't get it. I thought it was dumb. It, I had some friends that played it, but I don't even think they really played it that much. But yeah, I could never get into it. It just seemed like a lot of work to have some, you know, kid in your neighborhood, you know, just fuck over your character and, you know, you lose all, it just seemed like too much work. And I don't have that much of an imagination, so I would have sucked at D&D. So, but the film looks at, you know, the people that are still actively playing this game, people that are going to conventions. And, it's funny when I was, you know, looking at the list of movies and I saw this, what came to my mind was kind of a movie, you know, in the same style or, you know, mold or whatever you want to call it as King of Kong. And while I was in line, somebody in front of me made the suggestion that, you know, this film might end up being a lot like King of Kong. And sure enough, I think it was to some extent. I think that, you know, in King of Kong, there was more emphasis placed on, you know, the actual gameplay in itself. In Dungeons & Dragons, the gameplay was almost, you know, it was just, it was the vehicle through which we got to learn more about the characters, you know, and the people, you know, not the characters, but the people, you know, the actual subjects of the film. And, you know, as you got beyond the initial geekdom of a lot of things that are in the D&D world, it really became more a story of you know, it just became a human story. And, you know, there seemed to be a overriding theme of a lot of loneliness, a lot of despair, at least amongst the subjects that, you know, that McAllister chose to present. You know, maybe that's not the case amongst the whole D&D community, but in seeing the stories of these particular people, that really was, you know, one of the predominant themes throughout. But again, it was a fun, you know, it poked a, you know, I don't know if McAllister was a player of D&D himself. There was no Q&A after the film. It started at 10:30 and ended around midnight on a Thursday night. So there was no Q&A. I don't know if he was a D&D player himself. I get the impression that he probably was. But, you know, they, you know, definitely poke some fun at, you know, at the game itself and some of the silliness of it. But, you know, again, it was, you know, it became a subject, a character-driven film. Really entertaining, quick 90 minutes. And, you know, it gave you a look into a subculture that, you know, I wouldn't have known that much about, you know, aside from the stereotypes. And, you know, that's one thing that I, you know, that's one of the biggest things really that I enjoy with documentaries is learning about different groups of people that, you know, I don't necessarily know much about. And, in this film definitely did that. So, would definitely recommend, seeing the Dungeon Masters for, you know, a really, you know, quick and easy view. I mean, I shouldn't say quick, but I mean, the movie moves pretty nicely. So, 90 minutes went by, you know, rather quickly. A lot quicker than Food, Inc. Found myself looking at my watch quite a few times during Food, Inc. But anyway, those are the films that I did go and see. I wanted to, you know, do a podcast about the festival, because I really, really did enjoy, you know, all the documentaries with the exception of Food, Inc. I made it through that. But all the other documentaries I really did enjoy. The Q&A sessions, there were Q&As after all of the movies except for the Dungeon Masters, and I didn't get to stay for the Tyson Q&A because I had to get to the Dungeon Masters at a different theater. And I would have loved to have found out from James Toback just exactly, you know, how he shot his interviews with Tyson, you know, in terms of how much how much time he had, with the, some of the early stuff as opposed to the late stuff. But all in all, great films. Highly recommend you go and see them all. So it's been 40 minutes, been more than enough time. So if you have any comments, feel free to leave them on the website. If you want to shoot an email, by all means do so. You can write to ijustwannasee@gmail.com. And that's it for now. I'm gonna try and start getting back into the groove of doing a podcast probably every 2 weeks or so. Maybe do one or two films depending on how things go. And that's it for now. Thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you later.